The name of this workshop is How to Make Yourself Do Anything. And the reason that it's called that is because 20 years ago, I lost my dream, very nearly my home and my life, because I couldn't make myself do the things that I needed to do at the time that I needed to do them. And although I don't know whether any of you are having similar circumstances in your lives or anything approaching that, I definitely hope that something like that never happens to you, and this workshop will tell you how you can make sure that it doesn't. So, I debated a little bit over how much of that story I should actually share in this workshop, because it's a little bit personal and I'm kind of a private person. But I felt ultimately that the best way for you to know that the things that I'm going to be telling you on this call are not just self-help, motivation, motto, mumbo-jumbo type of things. These are hard-learned lesson notes from the School of Hard Knocks. Not only is there the one incident that I just alluded to, but many years later, I lost $100,000 and ran a promising business into the ground for exactly the same reason. So, these have been some very expensive lessons for me, not only in terms of the amount of money and the personal tribulations that I went through to learn them, but also with 20 years of guilt, self-doubt, and other forms of self-punishment that I inflicted upon myself because of these things. So pay close attention for the next couple of hours, because, you know, this is information that if you actually take it to heart and use it, can change your life, even if you are just, even if right now your goals or ambitions are just something simple like making a career change or losing some weight or quitting smoking. Okay, I believe that everyone has within them a dream or more than one dream that can really make a difference in this world. And if you want to actually achieve your potential in life, you're going to need to know how to be able to make yourself do the things that need to be done when they need to be done in order to achieve your goals. Now, those of you who shared with me what your current biggest self-help challenges are, you overwhelmingly had three things that were issues, or three categories of things that you gave to me as your primary issues. And those were difficulties in staying focused or taking consistent action, turning your thoughts into things that you're actually doing in your life. Or number two, problems with procrastination, perfectionism, and other forms of self-sabotage. And three, not being able to decide what you want to do in the first place. And all three of these things could be described as difficulties in making yourself do something, whether that's making yourself take action, whether that's making a decision. This is all fundamentally self-control, self-discipline, willpower, whatever you want to call it. But there's a lot more to that subject than meets the eye. Okay? It's a problem that's been part of the human condition for as long as there have been human beings. And on this call, I'm going to explain to you why that is and what you can do about it. So pay close attention. During the first part of the workshop, I'm going to be focusing on some very general principles. As we go on, it will get more and more detailed in terms of what you need to do and how you need to do it. So I hope that everyone has their handouts ready. The link that I sent in a previous email, there's a page there where you can download the workbook. It's a 10-page PDF file. You need to make sure you have that printed out and in front of you and ready to fill in, because I'm going to be moving very quickly through a lot of this information and you don't want to miss anything. Okay, so to begin with, I want to tell you a little story about me and how I ended up needing to know how to make myself do anything, and, you know, the personal cost for me in terms of what happened because I couldn't, and what it's taken for me to learn this and share it with you. So, about 20 years ago, I had recently started work as a computer programmer. I was about 18 years old. And but my dream was that I wanted to become a writer. I wanted to write fiction. I also wanted to write books, self-help books, basically, to help people achieve what they wanted to in life. And I read a few books about the business of writing and how to make money as a writer and all that kind of thing. And I took the rather stupid step of quitting my job and trying to do that. I say stupid not because it was a bad idea in general, but because I really wasn't prepared. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and it turned out to be a disaster. See, the thing about getting almost anything in your life is that you have to be willing to pay the price to get it. And a lot of times people, and in this case definitely me, I knew on one level what the price of what I was trying to accomplish was. I knew that it was risky. I knew that I would need to be able to market and promote myself. But I sort of just shoved those things off to the side of my mind and didn't really pay as much attention to it as I should have. I sort of assumed that I would just make it somehow. That just doing, that being talented and being passionate and being all these other self-helpy sort of things would be enough. And it really wasn't. Number one, not only did I really not know what it was that I was doing, I couldn't get myself to do the things that I needed to do in order to do it. I had terrible trouble going out and approaching anybody about work or about, writing anything. I could barely pick up the phone and talk to somebody. I tried to put on a workshop back then at the university that I'd been attending and dropped out of due to lack of money. And I couldn't bring myself to approach people to tell them about the workshop that I was giving, even though I was so broke at that point that if I didn't sell something, I wasn't going to have enough money to go home or to eat that day. And I still couldn't bring myself to approach somebody because I just couldn't. I was being blocked by a feeling that would not let me move. Okay? And if you're it now, if you have a problem with procrastination or perfectionism, you know to some extent what I'm talking about here. There are some things that no matter how hard you try right now, you cannot bring yourself to do them. Okay? Maybe you are reading websites when you should be working. Maybe you go and watch TV when you really planned to clean up the house or work on some project that you really wanted to do. But at the time, I didn't understand where these feelings come from. I didn't understand how you can develop or how you can have a block like that. At the time, I blamed myself for being weak-willed and not being strong enough to do what I knew had to be done, and which there were severe consequences at that time for not doing. At the time, I wasn't aware of the fact that in medicine, one of the biggest problems is getting people to take their medicine, even people who are going to die without that medicine. People who are smoking and know that they should quit because they know it's going to kill them, who have had operations and have to have a box put in their throat so they can talk and still smoke out of it, knowing full well that it's going to kill them, and they can't make themselves stop. So the subject of this workshop is one that is personally very important to me. And so but back to my story. So I was broke. I had no idea what I was going to do. I was about I was making friends with all the homeless people in the area so I would have a network of contacts when I was about to be kicked out of where I was living. Finally, I just got to the point where I came really close to actually killing myself because I felt like there was no way that I was ever going to achieve my dream. There was no way that I could overcome these obstacles. In fact, the only reason that I did not kill myself was because a friend happened to, completely unknowing that it had any relationship to what was going on in my mind, told me a story about a botched suicide attempt of a friend of hers that deterred me, and I'll spare you the details of that story, but suffice to say that it sufficiently motivated me to realize that there had to be other ways of dealing with my problems. So I went and begged for my old job back, and locked my dream up in a little box and threw it to the bottom of a deep well and put myself into a nice little comfort zone where I didn't think about that ever again. And that's where I stayed for most of the next 20 years. I treated writing as something that I would get to someday, something that was, oh, it'd be kind of nice to do someday when I have lots of free time and lots of money. And I know that a lot of you on this call have something that's just as important to you as that was to me, that you have done the same thing with. To you, it's whatever it is that you are just sort of treating it as something that would be nice to get to someday, when at some point it might have actually been a central focus of your life. And so what I want to tell you now is that if you look at where I am today compared to where I was then, I want you to know that there is hope, that there is a possibility for you to pull that dream out of wherever it is that you've hid it, and actually make it a real part of your life today. So, that having been said, I want to now begin sharing with you some of the specific things that I learned from these experiences, both that experience 20 years ago and the subsequent experience about 6 years ago of running a promising business into the ground because I couldn't ask anybody to buy anything. And compare that with where I am now and let you know what the lessons are that can be learned from this. So if you turn to page 2 of your workbook, and you can begin filling these things in when I tell them to. I'm not going to go through on each and every single one and say, fill in this item or whatever. I'm going to leave it to you to fill these in. But the most important point I want to bring up is that you can't always tell yourself what to do. And that's item number 1 on page 2 of your workbook. You can't always tell yourself what to do, but I'm going to hold that thought for a moment and come back to this one. Now, I said earlier that I didn't realize at the time that I quit my job that, or I did realize what the price was that I needed to pay to get what I wanted. But I pushed it to the back of my mind and didn't really think about it. I tried to, ignore that and just say, oh, this is going to work anyway. I'm just going to, because I have to do this, I'll be able to do everything that needs to be done, and I will get through this somehow. But the rule of life is, and this is item number 3 on page 2, the rule of life is this: take all you want as long as you pay first. Okay? This principle is at the heart of more self-help books than you can count. It is the soul and the foundation of everything else that I'm going to tell you on this call. Okay, everything else is either a special case of this, a consequence of this, or an example of this. You can have whatever you want in your life as long as you are willing to pay the price of it up front. You can't harvest from the field until you plant the crops. You can't get a return on investment until you make the investment. You can't win a bet unless you make the bet. You have to make the payment for whatever it is that you want, whether that payment is in planning, whether it's in making a decision, whether it's understanding the risk of what you're going to attempt, whether it's acquiring the skill necessary to do the thing that you're going to attempt. And I flunked most of these points. You know, for the last 20 years, I've spent most of the last 20 years flunking on all of these points in nearly everything that I tried to do in my life. So, again, the rule is take all you want, but pay first. And the second thing on which I flunked that's on this list that I flunked really badly most of the time is number four. In general, I had a tendency to do things the hard way, because I believe that, you know, I was so talented as a writer, or I was so smart, or I was so good at business, or whatever other thing that I believed that I was so good at, that I could just wing it, that I could just go out there and just try and do the thing and have it work. Even in small things, like an exercise program, you know, I've had a tendency to think, well, you know, I'll just do some exercise. I don't really need a plan. I don't need to figure out exactly what I'm going to do. I'll just do it and make it work somehow. So this number four here is the question: would you rather be special because you did things the hard way, or successful because you did them the easy way? And the difference between the hard way and the easy way is the difference between doing things that match the way your brain and body are designed to work and the way that we'd like to think that as independent, self-reliant, upstanding people, we should just be able to do. We shouldn't need a support system to achieve our goals. We shouldn't need to have other people to share our experiences with in order to accomplish our goals. We should just be able to do everything on our own. We should just have enough willpower. And that is bull. Okay? That is, you know, sure, you can be a martyr and do all that stuff if you want. You can do it the hard way. Lots of people try. I've spent too many years doing things the hard way. And about a year ago, well, a little less than a year ago, I realized for the first time that I was doing things the hard way, and that all of the things that I'd been previously saying I didn't need, well, maybe I didn't need them, but I certainly wasn't succeeding without them, and I certainly wasn't doing things as easily as I'm able to do them now that I have those things in place. So that's something we'll be talking about a lot more as we get into the details here today. So, would you rather be special because you did things the hard way, or successful because you did them the easy way? Okay, now the other thing that I flunked for most of the last 20 years is number five. What's inside is important, but what's outside is essential if you want to do things the easy way. See, I thought it was what was inside me that made the difference. I thought it was motivation and passion and talent and potential and intellect and all of these other fine-sounding things, which are all good. They're important. Don't get me wrong. You're probably not going to go very far without those things. But at least as important, and probably more important, are external factors. If you're starting a business, you don't have a business without customers. It doesn't matter how good your product is. You know, if you want to have a better career, it doesn't matter how much you want it if the job you're looking for doesn't exist, or you can't find it or get yourself in touch with the people who have it. If you're trying to lose weight or quit smoking or make any other kind of personal habit change, your intentions are not enough. If your environment is such that you're going to have cigarettes in front of you or snacks in front of you all the time, well, again, you can try and be so self-righteous that you're going to somehow succeed in spite of those odds. But frankly, if you take that route, you're being an idiot, just like I was. You're making things hard for absolutely no reason, and nobody is going to look better on think of you better think better of you because you made these attempts on your own if you're not succeeding. So again, it's not what's inside you that counts here. It doesn't matter how noble your intentions are that you can somehow, you know, that you intended to do without these things on your own, and didn't remove the temptations or the obstacles from your environment first. That doesn't do anybody any good, least of all you. So, there are two more things that I haven't covered on this page, but before I do that, I'm going to kind of wind down from a little bit from this level of intensity that I'm doing here, because although this is very important and this is very serious, I do want you to understand that there is a very positive side to all of this. When you understand these things that I'm telling you and the rest of what's in this workshop, you will be able to make some really terrific changes in your life. I am now a writer. I'm doing it part-time. I'm giving workshops like these. I'm giving people coaching in their lives. I'm doing all of the things that I wanted to do 20 years ago. Okay? And I'm actually making more today doing that part-time than I made as a programmer 20 years ago. So that's a really big change for me. And that's something that only happened because I learned the things that I'm telling you on this in this workshop. So before we proceed with the other two points, I want to call on one of the people who went through my 7 Days to Live Your Dreams workshop series last year, who's made some change of his own, so that you can know that this is not just something that, you know, this is not a case of you have to go through the same hardships that I did in order to learn these things. It is possible for you to take these lessons and apply them in your own life, you know, even if you are not the person who went through the hardships. So I'd like to introduce you to Josh Kaufman. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, actually, Josh. I'm sure you'll correct me in a moment as soon as I unmute your line. Josh is the author of The Personal MBA, and he's done a number of other interesting things, actually. But I'll let him tell you that story himself. So, Josh, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Great.
Why don't you share with us a little bit about where you started last September when I was first starting the 7 Days to Live Your Dreams workshop series?
Sure. And this is actually a really interesting story, because I'm very glad everybody on the call is here to hear what Philip has to say, because as you'll hear in a moment, it really has made a huge difference in my life. When I first came across Philip, I was actually working at a job that was, to be perfectly blunt, completely and totally wrong for who I was and what I wanted and what I was able to do. And it was really a very, very low point in my life. I knew something had to change, but I was really stuck in this whole web of things that I really just couldn't break out of. Just coming home every day, I was completely miserable. You know, I was actively trying to find some way to change my circumstance, but it was so hard. It's, as Philip was talking about earlier, just the emotions that I was bound up in at that time were really just holding me in, and I didn't know what to do. So when I met Philip, I was a little skeptical at first, quite frankly. It was, okay, I'm kind of desperate here. Something needs to change, and hopefully this random guy I found on the internet can help. So I was one of the first members of Philip's 7 Days to Live Your Dreams workshop. And as I was going through the workshop and learning what Philip had to say, there were a couple very drastic things that changed in my life that I want to tell you about. the first thing that changed, and I don't want to steal too much of Philip's thunder by saying exactly what he told me that helped so much, but there's a couple things that I love about Philip's program. Number one, the guy, as you heard earlier, has a lot of experience, both in terms of reading and knowledge and all of those good stuff that self-help types of people tend to have. But he also has just a lot of really great life experiences, and he's learned a lot the traditional way, and he's learned a lot the hard way. And the perspective that he shared with me really helps break me out of the cycle that I was in and get me back on the right track. So kind of giving you the before and after. I was in a horrible job, hated it, life was just sucked bad. At this point, I'm sitting in a brand new apartment, in a brand new city, in a brand new job that I absolutely love. I have made 3 or 4 very positive changes in my life that are setting me on the right track. And I just have made just a lot of changes that are really, really good for myself.
So, Josh, why don't you tell us what happened as far as what was keeping you from making the decision to make a change in your career, and what happened after the decision-making workshop that covered some of the same things that we're talking about now about making decisions?
Yeah. Well, one of the major things was actually the sheer number of options. And when you're looking at changing something as important in your life as a job, there are a lot of considerations to come into play. I'd actually just been married for about 4 months to my wonderful wife, Kelsey. And, you know, there were just a lot of considerations. There were financial considerations. There were work and career considerations. I was actually, the job I was in externally was a really, you know, to an outside person, a wonderful job. It was a relatively high-paying, prestigious type of thing, but it wasn't good because I was miserable all day. And that had effects in the rest of my life as well. So part of it was just the sheer overwhelming emotional complexity and all of the options. I mean, I had so many choices, I didn't know what to do, and that by having such an overwhelming amount of things to think about, I wasn't able to make a decision. And one of the things that Philip is you know, just says quite often, which is a deceptively simple statement, is indecision is suffering. And it's true. It's definitely true, because there were so many things to take into consideration that both Kelsey and I didn't make a decision. And while we were, you know, keeping, you know, you call it keeping your options open, but while we were keeping our options open, we were actually sabotaging ourselves emotionally from really looking at things, deciding on something and moving and taking action. We weren't taking action at all. We were just ruminating and ruminating and ruminating, and then we'd feel worse and worse and worse because things weren't changing, but we weren't acting in a way to make those changes happen. So that was that one of the big mind shifts for me was the whole idea of indecision is suffering, and, you know, also one of the things that Philip often says is suffering is a divided mind. And not having either the knowledge or the life experience to know that when you split your mind among all of these things that you want or you think you may want, but you're not really focusing in on saying, this is really what I'm going to put myself forward, and this is what I'm going to go out and do. It was really a big form of self-sabotage for both of us. So we actually, while we were listening to one of Philip's workshops in the car, we were actually driving to visit my family. And both Kelsey and I were listening to the workshop on the way up on my cell phone. And that was the point where Philip really came across and delivered the message of decision, or indecision is suffering. And after that call, it was immediately after the call, we were still in the car, and we sat down and we really talked about what we wanted. And by the time we drove into my mom and dad's house, we had decided exactly what we were going to do. There were still things that we didn't know. It was okay. We decided that there was a job actually Kelsey could have taken in this new city that we're in right now. And we decided that we wanted to do that. And I didn't know what my job was going to be. I didn't know it was going to be with my same company. I didn't know if it was going to be with some other thing somewhere else. I don't know. But we made the decision right then, no going back, is that this is something we wanted to experience, so this is what we're going to do. And the amount of things that changed in our life and the number of people that then supported us because we did make a decision was quite frankly just astounding. So there are just a number of things by taking that step and making that decision, our life improved tremendously, and we were able to break out of that emotional, web of entanglement, because we weren't willing to put up with the indecision and with the overwhelming amount of choices anymore. We made a decision and we stuck with it.
So I'm going to jump in here for a moment, Josh, because I want to go ahead and fill in the last two points on page two for everybody here.
Sure.
And because they're the specific things that I didn't tell you this in advance, but I knew your story would illustrate. And because I didn't want to influence your spontaneity there, but
you're so crappy.
Well, comes with the job. Okay. So point number two, everybody, on page two, is that you don't need to know how before you commit. You have to commit to find out how. Okay? By that I mean that every decision you make, it doesn't have to be exhaustively analyzed to death before you make it. Most of the time, the things that we need to do most in life are things that we figure out after we've already made the decision to do them, because there is no choice. And I know, yes, I said earlier that I basically jumped in that way to my attempt at writing, but the problem is that if you don't also follow rule number three, you're going to have a problem here. Okay? So there's two aspects here. You don't need to know specifically what, you don't need to know exactly how you're going to succeed in a new city or a new business, but you have to be willing to pay the price for that. You have to be willing to say, whatever this takes, I know I can deal with it, and not simply push off what it takes to a little corner of your mind and ignore it, like I did. To give you another example from my life, this time a far more positive story. But a few months before I started my blog, a hurricane almost hit. Well, actually, it did hit our house here in Florida, and at the time we didn't have any hurricane shutters, and I had never boarded up a house before. My wife and I had never boarded up a house before, and we had just 2 days in which to find all of the wood, cut it down to the right sizes out in the blazing hot sunshine, drill holes in concrete all the way around the house, put bolting things in, lifting heavy pieces of plywood, and we did that for almost a day and a half, I think, and the hurricane was due in a matter of hours. It was terribly hot, and it was starting to rain. The wind was starting to pick up, and we still had the entire front side of the house unprotected as yet, and my wife was saying, we should go to a shelter, we're not going to finish this in time. And, I made a decision at that point that I had been running from far too many things in my life for far too long, and that for once I was going to stick to something no matter what it took. And I told her, it's okay if you want to go to the shelter. I'm going to continue. I'm still going to put this up. The hurricane can be here and it can, and blow me away, but I'm still going to finish doing this, because this is something that I want. I want our house to be protected. I want, to finish this because it makes a difference to who I am. So, as Josh implied a minute ago, however, when you are fully committed to your goals and you are willing to pay the price to do whatever it takes to achieve them, other people become surprisingly supportive of you. And my wife stayed and helped, and we finished well before the storm arrived. So the point here is you need to use, you must use both of these rules. Okay? Don't use the pay first rule to mean that you have to figure out exactly how you're going to accomplish something. You can commit before you know exactly how. You just need to be willing to do whatever it takes and to enter into that commitment with open eyes and understanding that it may be hard. Now, Josh, I understand that you went through some trials and tribulations in your move, did you not?
Oh yeah, quite a bit. I mean, that was we actually had decided on moving before I found out about my new job. So here we were packing, moving the next weekend, and it was actually shortly before Christmas. And we didn't know whether I was going to have a job by the time or not. We had everything to pack. We actually for everybody, we actually moved into New York City, which is a very different experience for me, since I've never lived in a city this big before. We had to drive a U-Haul into New York City, which is an experience in and of itself. So yeah, I mean, in choosing this course of action, there were a lot of things that needed to be done, and there were a lot of things that we needed to consider. But by making the decision, and by not being willing to consider other alternatives, it really made it a heck of a lot easier.
Right, so I want to highlight something that Josh said about not being willing to consider other alternatives. Just like I did, chose not to consider the alternative of going to a shelter, I did not allow any other possibility to get in your way. Part of the decision-making workshop is the point that decision means cutting off all other possibilities. When you don't consider possibilities, you don't have any indecision, you don't have suffering that comes about as a result of trying to pick between this thing or that thing. When you're actually committed to a course of action, regardless of the consequences, a strange thing happens. Okay, so now some people have described this in almost mystical terms about how, things show up out of nowhere to help you and, and all of this. And I definitely agree that one thing that definitely happens is that when you interact with other people and they sense your commitment, people do respond to it on an unconscious level. But another thing happens, and that is that you do not go back on yourself. You do not spend time second guessing yourself, because if you make a decision blindly, if you say, "Well, I'm going to give this a try and see how it works." Or if you say, well, this seems like the right thing to do, that's not really a decision. Decisions are not something that happens as a result of reasoning processes. If you're making a decision for a reasoned process because you have decided that based on the current circumstance, this seems like the right thing to do, this is the foundation of your failure to follow through. Because when the circumstances change, so will your so-called decision. It's not a decision unless you can make it independent of your current circumstances. my decision to keep working on the on putting up hurricane shutters was independent of the fact that at that particular moment there was a hurricane bearing down on us. By a peculiar circumstance, by the way, after we, I don't attribute any particular meaning to this, but by a peculiar circumstance, around the time that I was making that decision, the hurricane actually slowed down and took several more hours to arrive than it was supposed to. Probably just a coincidence, but still, the circumstances do not. If circumstances control you, if circumstances are the reason for your decision, you don't have a decision. If you decide, yes, this is a really good week to start my exercise program, what happens next week when it's not a good week for you anymore? It's gone. It's out the window. It's history. Bye-bye. Okay? If you are making your decision based on your conditions in life, your circumstances, and whether it's a good time to do it or not, whether it seems like a good idea, what your friends think, or any of that stuff, you are setting yourself up for failure promptly. Prompt failure. It doesn't take that long for circumstances to change. Circumstances change all the time. You have to be able to not change with the circumstances. I'm going to do one more thing on this page, and then we're going to jump into a lot more about the subject of how the ways in which circumstances matter and the ways in which they don't. So on this page, I want to bring up one last thing from Josh's earlier story. If you look at item number one, which at this point should be the only item you don't have filled in on this page, is you can't always tell yourself what to do, but you can always ask what you can do. You can always ask what you can do. The difference is this. Just to give a random example, when I was working on the handout for this workshop, I spent a lot of time this week going, gosh, I'm really not making very much progress on this thing. And I kept trying to tell myself, oh, I need to spend more time working on this. I need to spend more time working on this. And that never really works. But what does work is when I sit down and ask myself, what would I like the handout to be like? What would be really good, you know, material to have in there? How would I like the workshop to end so that I know what, you know, how it needs to progress through the beginning and the middle? And by asking myself questions instead of telling myself things, I immediately become interested, curious, creative, motivated, and within 24 hours I had my handout. So, actually, it was even less than that. Come to think of it, it's probably something like within 12 hours, and I was doing other things during some of that time as well. And that was after a few days of struggling with trying to put the material together. So you actually have a lot more resources available in your mind than you were aware of. But the way that you engage them is by committing to a course of action and ruling out other possibilities. Doing so knowing full well what you're getting yourself into and what price you may need to pay, and being okay with that price, and asking yourself what you need to do. When you do all of these things, things become a lot simpler. You find the solutions to the problems. You don't stress out over it. You don't flip-flop back and forth over whether you're really doing this now or whether something else came up that's more important or any of that. No, it's just what you decided. Nothing more, nothing less. So again, the central rule of all of these things that I'm telling you on this call is that you can take all you want as long as you pay first. The form of how you pay, in the case of making a decision that sticks, making whether it's your resolution or your goal or whatever you want to call it, the price of making a decision that sticks is the other four things on this page. You need to decide whether you're going to do it the hard way or the easy way. You need to focus on what's outside you that's going to come in, that's going to get between you and what you're trying to accomplish. You need to commit without having to first figure out everything in advance, because that's just another way of saying that your decision is based on the circumstances and not simply based on what you want. And you need to ask yourself what you're going to do, rather than trying to tell yourself, oh, I'm going to do this, oh, it's going to be great, oh, I'm going to, you know, I need to get this done. Yap, 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 yap. All that telling yourself of stuff to do doesn't work, doesn't mean a thing. So turn to page 3. We're going to start picking up the pace a little bit, because we've got a lot of material to cover in the next hour and a quarter. So, so everybody take a look now at page 3, which is The Evolution Conspiracy or Why Change is Hard. And these are the three major problems that nearly everyone said one of these three things as being their major self-help challenge. Either we can't stay focused or take consistent action, and that's because, and go ahead and fill this in now, we are slaves to our habits and our environment. We can't stay focused or take consistent action because we are slaves to our habits and our environment. Now, our genetic upbringing, our heritage from the animals, you might say, is that our brains are designed to pay more attention to what happens outside of us than what happens inside of us. We are designed not to, so that our brains don't lock up in a loop and start obsessing about things and not paying any attention to what's going on around us, because that's a very good way in the jungle to get eaten by something, if you're not paying attention. Second, we're designed to learn to do things the same way over and over again, because anything that works, our bodies and minds want to make sure, or our genetic heritage, you might say, wants to make sure that we'll continue doing it. Because if we did it yesterday and didn't get killed, we should probably do the same thing again today. And that's the way, and that's why we have habits. So these things are designed to be the overriding function in our lives. Our brains are not wired for us to really have a lot of say in this. Okay? Seriously. Free will is seriously overrated. We have it, and we can override these things, but it's very difficult. And if you want to do things the easy way instead of the hard way, you need to take this into consideration. And one of the ways, as we'll be talking about later, is by adjusting your environment. But another thing is also to set things up so that you don't have to choose all the time. One specific example that I want to tell you about in relation to this is that I recently read an article that was talking about some experiments that scientists have recently done where they have found that free will, or willpower, whatever you want to call it, is actually a limited resource. If you have somebody do something like resist eating candy and then perform some other task requiring concentration or willpower, those people do more poorly than people who are, you know, who are either given the opportunity to indulge or just not given another willpower challenge. So you actually have a finite number of what you might call willpower points that you can use each day. The more willpower you expend by making choices to do something or refrain from doing something, the more of those willpower points you use up, the more of your ability to focus or concentrate or do something different than your normal routine in a given day you will be. Okay, so the problem is this. A lot of times when people set New Year's resolutions or set out to make some major change in their lives, they don't understand this and they don't take it into consideration. So they make 9 New Year's resolutions, or they try to change 5 different things in their life all at the same time. They want to, you know, start an exercise program and maybe diet too, and they're going to start, you know, watching less TV or spending more time with their family. And they try to make all of these changes at once. But they at the same time don't really set up any kind of system, so they're just trying to do it in the kind of wing it mode where you just say, okay, so I'm just going to remember, oh, I'm supposed to do this. And that uses up willpower points like crazy. So within a couple of days, you're going to be completely burned out on trying to focus on all of these different things, where you could have been just focusing on one at a time, on introducing one of those things at a time. And, you know, I've read this before in self-help things. You've read this before. Everybody, a lot of the things that I'm telling you today are in some ways going to be absolutely common sense things that you've heard before. But you probably didn't realize how important they were and why. This is one of those things. The reason why you want to focus on only making one change at a time, at least one change at a time that involves willpower points, is that you're going to run out of them. It doesn't do any good that you think that you're going to do it because you're just going to try really hard, because you're going to run out of steam sooner or later if you do this. What you need to do instead is that as much as possible, you must make th make you must set things up so you don't have to make decisions, because making decisions is something that uses up willpower points. If you have to decide today whether or not you're going to exercise, you're using willpower points. If you have to decide where you're going to exercise today, you're burning willpower points. If you have to decide what exercise you're going to do and how much of it you're going to do and with how much weight, well, by the time you get through all of that, you may actually use up all your willpower points for the day. I mean, I've had days in the past where that's about as far as I got, was deciding the where and the when, and I don't have any points left over to actually do the freaking exercise. So you need to understand that willpower points are limited. We are slaves to our habit and our environment because our brain only gives us a limited number of willpower points to spend each day. This is a safety mechanism that keeps us from getting too crazy and overriding our evolutionary imperatives to survive and reproduce. It's so that we don't get too obsessed with our hobbies and, you know, and forget to hunt and eat, or to, you know, forget to reproduce or whatever else. It's specifically intended to keep us focused on on the outside and give us a limited control to respond to our circumstances differently than what the circumstances dictate. So that's the first way in which we're slaves. Now let's look at number two. We can't stop procrastination and self-sabotage because we are slaves to our learned safety signals. We are slaves to our learned safety signals. Now, in the wild, when a small animal is before it's reached adulthood and it is hanging out with, you know, the mother lion or beaver or warthog or whatever it is, whatever the animal in question is, it is going to learn a number of things through imitation. And human beings go through a similar stage in their early life, the time period before we're particularly verbal or reasoning creatures, between the time we're born and around the age of 5 or so. And during this emotional imprint time period, we are particularly prone to taking snapshots of emotional pictures, you might say, that represent a flight or f sorry, a flight, fight, or fright response to a particular circumstance. We learn When we get yelled at by our parents, we learn to freeze in a certain circumstance, or we learn that there is something that we should be afraid of, or we learn to attack something, or to be angry at something, to defend ourselves against something. These emotional imprints in animals are an excellent survival mechanism. They teach a monkey, for example, to fear a snake and to freeze or to run away or do whatever it is that the grown-up monkeys do when the baby monkey sees them do it. But we learn the same responses. However, unlike animals, we have more sophisticated brains, and we associate these safety signals, these stop signals, these, you know, freeze responses, don't move because there's danger. We take these responses and we generalize them to a wide variety of things. Do you remember how I was telling you earlier that if that when I was trying to sell a workshop, 20 years ago, or when I was in business 6 years ago. The difficulties that I had with approaching people and saying and trying to get them to buy things or anything like that, and how I just could not, literally could not make my body move in the way that it was necessary to move to do those things. It was just rooted to the spot because I had a learned safety signal that I acquired in early childhood, perhaps something about talking to strangers, I don't know. There's not really very good memory below that age because basically you're still in the animal imitating its parent stage, and there's not really a whole lot of memory detail that you can extract from those things. But it's probably some kind of thing about not talking to strangers for all I know. But I had this feeling that would literally keep me rooted in place. My muscles would just lock and freeze and not let me do the thing. And, almost any situation where you have procrastination and where you've tried hard and fought against your procrastination and said, I really need to do this thing, I should really do this thing, and then you just didn't move, you have experienced a learned safety signal. Okay, your body, you've have discovered that, guess what? Sometimes there isn't such a thing as free will. There are systems that will are an override. They will just kick in, and really have no choice about it. You are stuck. You won't move. You're frozen. They talk about people who teach skydiving teach about this fr the freeze where people just will freeze in the doorway going out of the plane, and they just cannot bring themselves to jump out. Some people have that response, some people don't. And the reason is because it is a learned response. And you can learn that response to anything. You can freeze up about talking to people. You could freeze up about doing anything that might be better than somebody else because you've learned that, being successful is drawing attention to yourself. You can learn all kinds of crazy things and link them to these freeze responses that will keep you from partaking fully of the life that you could have. A lot of one of the problems that I had was that I could not I had a problem with taking things when they were offered. I went to a number of workshops last year where every time there was an opportunity to ask questions or, get some help on something, I noticed that I was always waiting to raise my hand until everybody else had gone. And, even though I really had some things that I wanted to ask, I found that I couldn't ask unless I felt like everybody had had a chance. So you can get these things where you don't believe you deserve something. You think that you're not worthy in some way to get a particular thing. Well, I'm not as good as that other guy, so I don't deserve to be as successful. I'm not as handsome as that other guy, so I shouldn't ask that girl out on a date. I'm not, and you can just go and do these comparisons forever. But the thing is, they're all just stuff you're making up in your head. The real culprit here is the learned safety signal. In this particular case, the learned safety signal is one that's designed to keep you from being killed by your competitors in the pack. Okay, among social animals, be it dogs, cats, lions, wolves, you name it, there is a pecking order that is established among the animals. The animal at the top of the pecking order takes the lion's share, literally, of anything. Any kill, doesn't matter who kills it, any mates that are available, they get first pick. Only when they are done does everybody else get a pick. And if you're an animal and you violate this pecking order, you are asking to get yourself seriously injured or killed. Animals, therefore, do not violate this pecking order because soon after they become a member of a group, they learn their place in it and they abide by it. And that is done using these emotional responses that stop the animal from showing any aggressive behavior towards resources of the group. It prevents them from stepping forward to take their share of a kill or to pursue a mate when the alpha animal has not done this yet. So these learned safety signals serve no purpose in human beings because, with fortunately rare exceptions, we don't go around killing each other, you know, for taking, you know, a plate of food from the buffet or from introducing ourselves to persons of the opposite sex. We don't need this response. It serves no useful purpose in the modern day and age, and in fact, it serves no purpose for us at all, because the truth of the matter is we have other ways to resolve our difficulties. You know, we are intelligent enough not to hit on the girlfriend of the really big guy, you know, or particularly if he's carrying any weapons. Okay, we have an intellect that allows us to figure that out on our own. We don't need to have a shyness response that keeps us from talking to anybody or keeps us from, you know, raising our hand at a freaking seminar to ask a question, like I did last year. So this is problem number two for the issue number two for, you know, the way in which we don't actually own our lives the way we think we do. Number three, we can't decide what will make us happy. It's the third way in which our brains are defective. Okay, we can't decide what will make us happy because we are slaves to our biased prediction mechanism. Our biased prediction mechanism. Okay, so this is the third way in which your brain is screwed up. Put it colloquially. By biased prediction mechanism, I mean this. We can't decide what will make us happy because we don't know. Evolution didn't give us a mechanism to figure out what will make us happy because evolution doesn't care. Evolution doesn't care what will make us happy. Evolution makes us happy when we do the things that make evolution happy, like stay alive and reproduce. Okay? It doesn't care about whether we have a fulfilling life. A fulfilling life is not the function of our existence from an evolutionary standpoint. Our goal is just to stay alive and make kids that stay alive and make kids. That's all. That's all we're good for from evolution's point of view. What we want doesn't enter into that. So our brains have happiness prediction. Our brains do happiness predictions that maximize the probability that we will stay alive and have kids. They are not good at predicting what will be fulfilling for us. Are not good at predicting whether we will have a life that works for us or not. The other day I was in the grocery store and I overheard one of the clerks talking about how she hopes she wins the lottery because she's quitting this job and she's not going to work there. And I had to laugh to myself because they've done studies that show that people who lose one or more of their limbs, lose an arm, a leg, both legs, are happier after 1 year than people who win $1 million in the lottery after 1 year. Believe it or not. I'm not really going to get a whole lot into why that is in this workshop. We don't have enough time. But it's a striking example of how bad we are at picking what will make us happy. We think that winning $1 million in the lottery will make us happy, when in fact it will make us terribly unhappy, much less happy than people who don't win the lottery. A few months ago, I was at a workshop where I heard a guy talk who does financial planning for some very wealthy people, who was talking about how something like 80% of the people aged, I think, like 25 and under, who receive an inheritance of $1 million or more dollars will be dead within one year of receiving their inheritance. It's absolutely stunning how bad for you a really big good thing happening can be, especially when you compare it against really bad things happen, how good bad things happening to you can be. So how can we possibly know which decisions are going to make us happy? How do we know which goal is going to make us happy? And the simple answer is, we do not. However, the good news is that it makes a lot less difference than we think it does. I was working yesterday, I was coaching, doing an Ambition Ignition coaching session yesterday with one of our 7 Days to Live Your Dreams and Owner Circle members yesterday, who was contemplating which of two programming projects he might do next, creative projects that he wanted to work on. And the truth of the matter is that in making choices like that between, gosh, I could do this first or I could do that first, or, well, I could have, you know, this nice job or that nice job, really kind of overanalyzing it. Because the truth of the matter is that this is a case where our internal attitude is going to make far more difference to the result than the externals. Plus which, in a lot of cases, these are things of, you know, these are things that are going to come around again. You know, there's always going to be more projects that that guy could do. There's always going to be more jobs that you could have later on in your life. There are always, you know, different choices that you have and more ways that you can do things. So your choice of which wonderful thing you'd like to do, don't sweat it. Ask yourself what you want and observe what response you get in your gut. That's really what it boils down to. Make a gut decision and go with it. Stop the agony of indecision and do something. You'll learn a whole lot more about what it is that you need to do. There's also another thing that you can do about this, and that is stop focusing on individual goals so much. When you ask people what would make them happy, they tend to list things that are really points in time, you know, like winning the lottery, obviously, but also, oh, I want to lose 20 pounds, or I want to do, you know, I want to quit smoking, or I want to start a new business. And my response to this is sometimes, really? Do you want to lose 20 pounds, or do you want to weigh a certain weight for the rest of your life? Do you want to quit smoking, or do you want to be a non-smoker, maybe for the rest of your life? Do you want to start a business, or do you want to own and run a successful business? There's an incredible difference between these two things. Our brain's predictive machinery is designed for these point-in-time, one-off goals, like lose 20 pounds. I mean, not that specifically. That wouldn't be a pre-built goal of the mechanism. But more examples of pre-built goals would be find mate, find food, find shelter. Okay, these are one-time operations because we're not designed for any type of long-term planning. Remember, these same mechanisms are used by the simplest of field mice and other animals, large and small, to get on with their day-to-day business. So they're focused on immediate next goals. This brings up an interesting quandary for us as human beings because we need to balance between our day-to-day one-off goals like these, and living a fulfilling life, which is something different. Okay, living a fulfilling life is completely different from achieving your goals. Achieving your goals is a nice and enjoyable part of having a fulfilling life. It does not give you a fulfilling life. When you're done with the goal, all you have is a finished goal. You can quit smoking today. Terrific! You've already achieved your goal. So what about tomorrow? Are you going to start smoking again tomorrow, perhaps? You know, after you lose your 20 pounds, are you going to gain it back? What happens after? What kind of a life are you going to have? And that's really what you need to be thinking about as you move forward in life, is not focusing on goals exclusive to the understanding of what that goal is going to do to your life. If you are focused on some goal like losing 20 pounds to the exclusion of everything else, you might completely disrupt other areas of your life in the process. If you are focused on a career goal, you may be disrupting your family life in the process. And you may get the goal that you went after and yet discover that your life is less fulfilling as a result because of the side effects of what it did for you to be focusing on that goal to the exclusion of what a fulfilling life is. So, to sum up for the moment on this page, in short, we don't own our lives, our genes do. This is at the bottom of page 3. Go ahead and fill this in. In short, we don't own our lives, our genes do, by default. Okay? If we're not aware of the three ways in which we're slaves to the way our brains are built, we will not have any chance of overcoming these limitations. We will think that we can just decide to start a new habit and it'll just happen just like that. We will think that we should be able to overcome our sabotaging ourselves, you know, our holding back from going after what we want, our fears, our self-doubts, our self-pity, our despair, our every emotion that has ever held you back from doing something, you know, whether it's disguised in the form of perfectionism but is really fear of being criticized or fear of being too successful and pushing your way to the head of the pack and being killed by the big lion, these are not things that you're going to overcome with willpower. It simply will not happen. Okay, I tried for decades, made no progress until I learned what I learned last year about these learned safety signals and how to switch them off. Okay? What will happen instead is that if you practice really, really hard and train really well, you can probably manage to grit your teeth and do things anyway while you're experiencing those feelings, but you won't gain any more confidence in yourself as a result, because you'll still feel like a coward or a fool or whatever, you know, or a hopeless wallflower or whatever it is that you're afraid you are. Because the signal will still be there, even if you do somehow manage to succeed with at great pain and effort to drag yourself around the barrier sometimes. Finally, if you don't realize that there's no way you're going to be able to predict what will make you happy, no way, just give it up. If you don't accept that, you're not going to be able to make decisions and commit to them and avoid the suffering that comes with indecision and with changing your mind when circumstances change. So, we don't own our lives, our genes do. If we want to get them back, if we want to reclaim our lives from these broken brain parts, the only way to redeem ourselves is to pay the price of freedom. Okay, that's the last sentence on page 3. The only way to redeem ourselves is to pay the price of freedom. And what's the price of freedom, you may ask? Well, you may have heard the saying that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, and that saying applies here just as well. If you understand that by default we're going to be slaves to our habits and our environments, you have the choice of setting up good habits once you understand what a good habit actually is and how to set it up. You have the choice of setting up your environment, of changing your environment, of making sure that you have people who support your goals in your environment and people that don't support them are not. You have the choice of exposing yourself to experiences and situations and thoughts and ideas and people, like you are doing on this workshop right now, who have a different perspective on life than you currently do, that will help you change your perspective and start thinking about things a different way. One of the impacts of being responsive to our environment that our genes make us do is that our genes want us to pay attention to what other people in the tribe or the pack are doing, because our genes don't want us to be caught up in some personal obsession when the rest of the tribe just found a kill that they could scavenge on, and we might get left out and not get any because we weren't paying enough attention to what other people are doing. And I used to think that other people didn't have an influence on me, that I could just do whatever, you know, I could just stick to my ideas and do things my way or whatever, and that, you know, all that, you become like the people you associate with, didn't really have any effect on me, you know, or my attitude or any of these other things. And I found out that I was wrong. In principle, yeah, you can fight against the pack, just like you can do all of these other things if you're really, really good and you try really hard, and oh, doesn't that make you special? Would you rather be special, or would you rather get results? If you want to get results, you You need to make things easy for yourself by making your environment reflect the goals that you have. You need to make it as easy. You need to be asking yourself, how can I make this easy? How can I break this down into the smallest pieces that can be habits that I don't have to think about when I do them, that I don't have to make choices every day of whether to exercise and when to exercise and where to exercise and what exercise and how much weight and everything else. Figure that stuff out in advance one time and make it a habit that is an absolute rule that you do not break and you do not change and you do not enter into any second guessing about, because when you do that, guess what? Your brain can handle that. Your brain can handle doing the same thing every day. It's probably doing it now. It may not be doing the thing you'd like it to be doing every single day, but it's probably doing something every single day right now. You can handle doing something the same way every day. The more things that you want to accomplish in life that you can turn into doing the same time, the same place, in the same way every day, the more you will accomplish, period. This is, in fact, a big portion of the secret that I promised to tell you on this call about how to get a vast amount more done in a fraction of the time with far less stress. This is the key that I'm telling you right here to that. The more things that you can do without thinking about them, the more time you will seem to have. You will have immensely more time because, as Josh was mentioning earlier, indecision is not only suffering. A divided mind is not only suffering, but time itself is a suffering and divided mind. This is actually, you know what, I probably shouldn't even bring that up because it's a little bit more esoteric of a topic. It's something that we got into more in some of the other 7 Days to Live Your Dreams workshop. But just briefly, what happens is that your brain's perception of time is based on the degree of awareness and choice that you have involved, and your awareness of different choices at a point in time. While you are trying to make up your mind, you will burn time like crazy. Okay? Not only will it seem like you're spending more time, you actually will be spending more time than you will spend to do something that you're not having to think about. So, as I said, that's a little bit of an advanced topic. I'm not going to really get into that anymore. But this is still the key to achieving far more than you're achieving now in whatever it is that you want to do. Figure out how to make it into a habit that requires no choice, so it doesn't use up your willpower points and your focus points, and you can do it indefinitely. Second, price of freedom is eternal vigilance with respect to procrastination and self-sabotage and other learned safety signals. The price of getting rid of these safety signals is to be aware when you have them. And in fact, actually, I'm going to pause on that because we're going to jump into that again in a couple of pages here. And I've already said that focusing on your ideal life and what you would be how you want to be living from day to day is more important than goals when it comes to choosing what it is that you want to do next. So let's move on to page 4. We've got a lot still left to cover. So, how most habits and resolutions get broken and what you can do about it. And as the quotes here say, we tend to seek easy single-factor explanations of success. But for most important things in our lives, success actually requires avoiding many separate causes of failure. And we've just been looking at three of the biggest ones. The biggest causes of failure are the limitations of the design of the human brain, which is not designed to make us happy, it's designed to keep us alive and make us reproduce. But there are a number of more specific things that are specific reasons why we end up breaking our habits and resolutions and so forth and don't do what we really ought to be able to do, or we think we ought to be able to do. And the number one, well, actually, these are not in any particular order. They're all important. Pay attention to whichever ones are relevant to you. But the first one on this list is the presumption of failure. The presumption of failure. And what that means is that we don't do things because we assume that we're going to fail. Last year, right around the time of my 38th birthday, I was attending a workshop that was for people who wanted to make a living as writers and creators of workshops and things like that. And I learned an awful lot from it. And at the end, they were talking about how important it was to get ongoing coaching in order to achieve, in order to actually make progress and not have everything turn out to be just a bunch of stuff that you learned at a seminar and put on a shelf when you got home. And for a while, I was really mad at them at the end because, they were really saying, there were a number of different speakers, there were a number of different people who had been successful in their different niches of things that they write about, talking about the importance of this. And I got really angry because I really didn't want to face that. I wanted to believe that I could do it on my own and that I didn't need, anybody else's help or coaching or anything like that in order to do that. I could just learn what needed to be done and I would do it. Because I was still stuck in the heart in doing things the hard way because I'm special. And what happened when that evening, the evening of my 38th birthday, I was talking on the phone with my wife about all this, and it turned out when I analyzed what it was that I was really bothering me about it, is that I was only thinking about a couple of different I was thinking about three different possibilities. I was thinking, okay, I could spend this $1,000 a month on coaching and still end up not doing anything, and not only will I fail, I'll be out a whole crap load of money. I could not do the coaching and not do anything and fail, but at least I wouldn't be out the money. Or I could pay the money and maybe succeed, kinda, but then, I'll still not really feel successful because I had to get help. And it occurred to me while I was talking to my wife that there was another possibility that I hadn't considered, which is that I could get coaching and succeed and feel good about it. The thought that I might actually succeed, really succeed, never even entered my consciousness. I was making decisions. I realized then that I have spent most of my life making decisions based on the assumption that what I was going to try was going to fail. I was arranging my life to protect myself from the consequences of presumed inevitable failure. And this is so toxic of a thing that most people don't even realize that they're doing it. Because, when they consider whether to take a risk or to dare to do something that they believe in or that they want to do, they're not thinking, it's like everybody doesn't say, boy, that's going to be great, you're going to be so successful. Everybody says, gosh, well, what if you fail? And so we all get poisoned into this manner of thinking in terms of thinking about it as if we're going to fail, even at the same time as we want to succeed, we intend to succeed, we plan to succeed, we try to figure out all the ways to avoid failing, but we're still presuming on a feeling level, on a gut level, in the way that we think about it, we're thinking we're going to fail. And that can't help but cut you off from certain choices. Before I realized that last year, there were certain classes of things that I never would have spent money on as a business person, either for education or as investments in a business. Just would not have occurred to me before. Like, for example, spending $1,000 a month to listen to somebody tell me for only about an hour each month, and not just to me, but to a whole group of people. I was basically paying $1,000 a month to listen to a call like the one that you're on right now, only one that didn't necessarily have as much practical information as I'm giving you on this call right now. I mean, in terms of specifics. And that was something that I never would have done before last year. When I actually did it last year, I understood why I needed to do it, and I've spent considerably larger sums of money on relatively small things that in the past I never would have considered before, because it was based not on this, because I was making a decision based on the assumption of what if it isn't any good? What if it doesn't help? What if it's useless? Well, if you have that attitude, you're never actually going to succeed at anything, because you won't do the things that will make you succeed, because what if you do them and you still fail? Do you see the incredible block you are putting on yourself if you ever attempt to make a decision based on, well, but what if I fail? Well, so what? I've failed at a lot of things in my life. But now, I realize so many cases that if I had just paid the price first, if I had looked into what the true cost of doing something was and was willing to pay the price to actually succeed, rather than going into things in a half-assed way, I would have succeeded an awful lot more in my life. And I would have been doing what I'm doing now many years ago. So the presumption of failure is a big one. Second one, Wamish, or why are you making it so hard? Is what that stands for, so you can write that in there. Why are you making it so hard? I've talked about this a little bit. You know, well, one reason we make things hard is because we believe we have to. We believe that we won't deserve it. Well, deserving things is for animals. Deserving is an emotion that is to regulate the behavior of a pack to respect the pecking order so they don't get killed. You are not a pack animal. You do not have to deserve anything. You can just have what you want. It's really that simple. Now, you may have all sorts, you may have built up in your mind all sorts of moral objections to going after what you want. But these are rationalizations that are built fundamentally on a submission instinct that's designed to preserve you from getting your head clawed off by another animal. You do not need it. Please believe me on that. You do not need to deserve anything. You can just take it. Okay? Within moral bounds. If you've ever looked at the Code of Owners that's on the Owner Circle website, you've seen my saying about that, which is that deserving is for animals. You know, trade freely, give value for value with other people, but take what you want. You know, ask for your fair share in exchange, because you deserve it. Or, you know, this is to the extent that you can say that deserving is even a concept that makes any sense at all. Okay? You deserve whatever you trade for. You deserve what you ask for and get. That's what you deserve. So you don't need to make things hard in order to deserve them. In 7 Days to Live Your Dreams, one of my workshop attendees was an artist who was feeling incredibly guilty about being able to do what she loved for a living. You know, she would put off making paintings for people that she was getting paid for so that it would build up into something difficult so that she could feel like she had worked hard enough to deserve the money. And this is just another example of a learned safety signal, okay, something that's embedded in childhood and then stays with you and affects your behavior. Guilt is just another such safety signal. It's a response to create submission behavior to show to the other animals that you're not worthy. You're not worthy. You're not, you know, interfering with their rule of the pack. Okay? Oh, I'm sorry, Your Highness. I didn't mean to take a piece of this kill that belongs to the biggest animal in our tribe. Okay? You don't need that. Get rid of it. Number three, vague and conflicting goals. If you don't know what you want, you're not going to be able to get it. If you aren't specific enough about what exactly you want and when you want it, you're not going to get it. It's that simple. Same thing for number four, overambitious goals, where you're trying to solve everything in one go. I want to lose 20 pounds in the next week. Okay, you're really not being realistic there. Okay, I mean, you can only, well, not without getting too much into physiology, the only thing you can lose that much of in that time frame is water weight, most likely, you know, without causing serious injury to yourself in some fashion. But that's not the only kind of overambitious goals people have. People want to solve their problems once and for all. I want to clean the entire house. I want to have the perfect body. I want to, you know, I'm going to, you know, I want to change jobs immediately, you know, to some, you know, even though I don't have the skills yet for the job that I want. An overambitious goal is just as bad as no goal. What it's better to do is, instead of to make a goal of exercising every day, for example, or losing 20 pounds or whatever, is to have a goal to establish a habit of exercising every day, or have a goal to exercise tomorrow. If you don't if you have not yet established a habit, if you don't have something, if you haven't yet taken the time to figure out which days you're going to exercise, where, what exercises, how much weight, or how many minutes, or all of that, if you haven't sat down and decided that yet, your goal is actually too ambitious at this point. Make it smaller. Life happens every day. Today is your life, tomorrow is your life, the next day is your life. That is the only life you have. So when you make big, giant, far-off goals, and don't get me wrong, it's good to have ambitions, but there's a difference between putting all your energy into a goal that's tremendously far away and forgetting that you need to live every day of your life in between. If you're putting off living your life until you achieve these ambitious goals, or you want to, oh, I need to pay off all my bills before I can even think about going on vacation, you know, or I need to, you know, a lot of times these overambitious goals are attempts, once again, to deserve your results. You think that as long as you have debt, you can't think about opening a business or, you know, starting a business or changing jobs because, you know, or you think that, you know, because of these things that are, these circumstances that are affecting you in your life, that you need to first overcome the circumstances before you do anything else. And so that's another kind of overambitious goal that is also making things harder than they need to be. And the final point here is that ignoring the price or not paying it in advance is one of the biggest reasons why habits and resolutions get broken, and we've gone into that in quite a bit of detail already because I kind of jumped the gun earlier and talked a lot about this. But this is the theme that happens over and over here, is that you need to be willing to pay the price to get what you want, and you need to be willing to pay it in advance. You need to be willing to figure out what it's going to take and make the decisions that you need to make before the time comes, because when the time comes, you have to use up willpower points to make a decision. It's easy right now to make the decision that I'm going to exercise, you know, at such and such a time each day. It's hard to make that decision on the day, because on the day, you will have other circumstances. You will be sleepy because you just got up, or you'll be in a hurry because you got up late, or you'll have something that's on your mind. You know, there will be so many other things competing for your attention at the time that it's going to cost you a lot of willpower points to be able to go through with it, unless you have already in advance figured out, yes, I know that means that some mornings I might be late if I wake up late, or that I might have to be tired when I exercise. If you understand that beforehand and accept that as the price and say, I am willing to pay the price, I am willing to be uncomfortable when I exercise the first few times, I am willing to be late if that's what it takes, I am willing to forego watching TV with my spouse in the morning or evening or whatever it is, if there's something, you know, even if there's, if it's something I want to watch and I haven't done my exercise. If you pay attention to these potential conflicts that can arise between getting what you want and what happens in your day-to-day life, and you make the decision in advance that, no, those things don't matter, I'm going to do it anyway, you will find that it is far easier to follow through on those decisions when the time comes. The trick is you have to do it in advance. This is why in the Six Master Keys booklet that I've sent everybody the link for previously, and if you haven't filled it out, you really need to do that and go through that list, because that is your blueprint for applying all of the things that I'm teaching you in this workshop right now. Okay? Because in there it talks about writing down your goals, it talks about making decisions in advance, it talks about resolving conflicts in advance and knowing precisely what you're going to do when each of these things come up, whether it's whether it ranges from how do you get a babysitter at the last minute to, what do you do when your best friend is in town and wants to go to dinner when you've got your workout or whatever else it is planned. You've got to have a plan in advance for how you're going to deal with these conflicts. You need to know, well, okay, maybe there's something that costs some money, and I know I'm stretched thin financially right now, but what is this something, is this what I want to do? Am I willing to pay the price to get what I need to accomplish what I want? If you make those decisions in advance, then you will have a far better likelihood of achieving success. You will, at the very least, be avoiding many separate causes of failure, and that is definitely going to increase your probability of success. And some of the other quotes here, you can already see on this page why I included the things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things which matter least, and that special cases aren't special enough to break the rules, because these are illustrations of this point that ignoring the price or not paying it in advance is the most costly thing you can do. It is far more cost not paying the price, and I tell you this from hard, hard personal experience and much self-sabotage, much self-flagellation over these issues for the past 20 years, and the personal major failures, including that $100,000 loss that I told you about previously. Let me tell you, as they say, what is it? The price of education may be expensive, but what's the price of ignorance? Same thing here. Trying to take things by the shortcut route and not figuring out in advance what the cost is going to be to you to accomplish something and deciding, yes, I'm willing to do that. This is the true difference between success and failure. In fact, there's an entire book called The Ultimate Secret to Getting Absolutely Everything You Want, and the whole point of the book is that whatever you want, you can have as long as you are willing in advance to do whatever it takes to get it. So this is the same concept. You have to pay the price first. You have to make the plan first. You have to decide first. You have to understand what the conflicts are first. You have to write down, commit to, do this, take the steps beforehand, and the actual process will be so easy you won't believe it. All right, so we still have a few more pages here to get through in the next 30 minutes. So let's look now at, let's go with this one first. Okay, so turn to page 5. Two ways to accelerate your life and why you need both of them. So there are two things being illustrated here. There are two ways that you can speed up. If you've got a truck full of big round things in the back there, whatever that is that I drew, there's two things that you can do to speed up the truck. You can take rocks out of the back of the truck. Okay, that's the first thing. You can reduce the dead weight through the removal of obstacles. The removal of obstacles. And this corresponds to removing, primarily this corresponds to removing your learned safety signals that I've been telling you about, the feelings that cause you to freeze on the spot when you are trying to do something that you've been conditioned is not a good thing to do, whether it's a submission response, whether it's a fear response, or any other type of, freeze for safety reasons or just don't do this response. When you take those out, there's less in effect. You have in effect fewer rocks that you're dragging around with you, and your truck goes faster. The second thing that you can do is that you can make your engine bigger through the development of skill. The development of skill. Okay? The way that you when you develop skills, whether that skill is making decisions, whether it's building up particular habits and practice of doing things, what happens is that you literally grow your brain. This last week, I was actually reading an article in Time Magazine where they've recently been doing brain studies where they do live brain scans on people while having them do various things like meditating or, you know, practicing certain hand-eye coordination skills and so forth. And they've discovered some amazing things about how quickly people can literally rewire the circuits of their brain to shift more portions of their brain to a particular activity. So when you practice something, regardless of what kind of skill it is, whether it's a musical instrument, whether it's concentration, decision-making, you know, your particular art that you practice as an artist or writer or, you know, whatever kind of creative work you do, whatever you practice, you grow your brain's ability to do. So this is another example, by the way, of paying the price in advance, that developing skill increases your ability to handle more things in your life. As I remove more obstacles from my life, every negative feeling, every flinch reaction, every learned safety signal that I remove from my life gradually increases my confidence. But with that increase in confidence, I'm taking on more things, and I also need to increase my competence. I've been practicing constantly lately and trying to improve my time management skills so that I can take on and do and accomplish more things. So it's really not the case that you're just going to one day have some sort of, you know, wonderful change happen to you by going to a workshop like this, and suddenly, because you no longer have any rocks in the back of your truck, you now have a most wonderful life. Because as you remove things, as you remove the things that are holding you back, and removing things that hold you back is really the only thing that you can do quickly. Back in the days when I, you know, was broke and getting close to homeless, I read a Tony Robbins book, Unlimited Power, I think it was his first book, you know, and he was talking about how he made this miraculous change in his life and all of this. And at the time, I mean, I was really, really hoping that reading that would do something similar for me. And unfortunately, the problem is that there's really two kinds of change that can take place in your life. The kind where you throw rocks out of the back of the truck, the kind where you unload negative feelings or beliefs that are holding you back, that one takes place instantly. It can at any rate, and with the techniques that I teach, that definitely can be done. You can remove rocks from the truck instantly. What you cannot do is make your engine bigger instantly. It does take practice, and it does take time. And the reason for that is that it involves physically growing your brain. Removing obstacles and beliefs is like rerouting one circuit. When you remove a negative belief or feeling, it's like you're basically making a shortcut in your brain. And your brain prefers the shortest path to get from one point to another, so it immediately prefers to go that way. But when you learn a new skill, you actually have to grow new pathways. You can't just shortcut an existing pathway. Okay? What happens is that on the path between, for an obstacle or a freeze feeling, there's a feeling that lies between you and where you're trying to get to in your life. But the path from you to where you want to go to already exists. You already know what you want to accomplish. There's already a path there. It's just blocked. So when you remove the block, you can immediately move forward. But to actually develop any new skills, or it's to put this in concrete terms, suppose that your problem is that you really have trouble approaching somebody attractive and asking them out. If you remove the block, the emotional block that keeps you from doing that, you will be able to go up and talk to them. But it won't mean that you'll be very good at talking to people. Okay? You see the difference there? Removing blocks allows you to move forward, but it doesn't mean you're going to be any good at what you're trying to move forward on. You need to actually develop the skills. And developing skills is a process that requires time. It requires, ideally, examples that you can learn from. And it requires repetition over time. these are non-negotiable aspects. There's a certain extent to which you can shortcut the process a little bit by doing imagined practice. If you have a vivid enough imagination, you can actually, the scientists referred to in this article that I read last week, actually said that they found that people could imagine practicing the same physical skills, and they could still see the same brain rewiring taking place over a period of time. But they still had to practice the same number of times to get the same growth. The fact that they practice in their head might have made it more convenient to practice more times, but the same amount of practice is still required to grow the same amount of new physical connections in the brain to, you know, rededicate circuitry specifically to the purpose of doing that task. So anyway, to fill in at the bottom of the page here, now you have room to take on more, and then the cycle repeats. Okay, as I load more things in the back of my, you know, as I first unload the feelings that hold me back from doing things, okay, that gives me some room in my truck, especially when I then start making the engine bigger. But pretty soon, the truck is filled to capacity again. This week, I reached my capacity to do more things and ran into problems producing this workbook until I took a step back and remembered some of these same things I teach. So you need to not get into the trap of thinking that, you know, there exists some perfect guru, it certainly isn't me, who can take all of these things that you're learning right now and apply them with 100% consistency 100% of the time. It doesn't work that way. I have the same brain defects that you do. We all have the same brain defects. What's different about most self-help gurus, at least the good ones, as I found last year when I got into workshops with some of them, is that they all have coaches. They all develop support systems around themselves. They also make use of the fact that when they coach others, they are reminded of the things that they themselves need to be doing. I actually, it was during the time between the last workshop I did and this one, it was actually a rather tough time for me at times because I didn't have the regular occurrence of preaching to others what had worked for me so that I could remind myself to do it. So getting yourself to actually do things is always the hard part. You can know all of this material that you're learning tonight, and if you don't do anything different tomorrow, if you don't have any way to create an ongoing environment to reinforce this, nothing is going to happen. Okay? This will just fade into memory as like, oh, didn't I take this? Yeah, I had some really good information in that. Yeah, I should do that. And you really don't want to have that happen, do you? So you need to start taking into consideration, what are you going to do different? What are you going to change in your environment? That begins with writing things down. This is one of the reasons why I'm making you write all this stuff in this book. When you write something down, it moves from being an idea in your head to a thing that is in your outside reality. And as we said earlier, what does your brain care about more? Outside reality. All the motivation and workshops in the world are not as useful as writing down your one thing that is important to you to do and putting that piece of paper someplace where you can see it, because your brain cares far more about what is outside you or what somebody else like me tells you than what you tell yourself. Of course, the same applies to me. My brain pays more attention to what somebody else tells me than what I tell myself. So I make sure that I have an environment that supports me, that contains people who will tell me the right things, or who will give me the opportunity to hear myself say the right things, so that it's coming back to me, and that I believe it, because I'm telling somebody else and they're believing it. This is the way religion works, by the way. This is the way Weight Watchers works. This is the way Alcoholics Anonymous works. This is the way everything that actually works in self-help with any degree of regularity or consistency of success works. It works by using the limitations of our brains against themselves. We have to leverage the ways that our brains are broken in order to fix them. Our brains care more about what's outside us? Well, put your goals outside you. Put people around you who will, your brain cares more about what other people think? Put yourself with people who think the way you need to think. Use your own brain against itself here. Okay? So let's go to page 6. And we're going to take a few minutes to talk about eliminating negative feelings and shared safety signals before we come back to the subject of creating an environment of success in which you'll be able to move forward in a consistent way and have this not be just something that fades into memory and isn't a part of your life anymore. Okay, so page 6, how to discover what's really holding you back and break free. Rule 1. Do the thing first, even if you're sure you'll fail. Do the thing first, even if you're sure you'll fail. Why is this? What do I mean by this? Okay. 20 years ago, when I locked myself back inside a comfort zone and pretended that my dream was not all that important, I stopped doing things that would take me outside of my comfort zone. I stopped thinking about trying to, write any articles for magazines or, really do any of the things that I wanted to do. Because that way, I didn't have to feel bad about it because I wasn't encountering the thing that was, the things that would cause me to have bad feelings. I didn't go into any circumstance where I would be required to sell or promote or, introduce myself to strangers in order to make progress. I studiously guided my career to avoid these kinds of things. So, to a large extent, I forgot that I had these blocks in the first place. And with a disastrous effect 6 years ago when I got into a business with my wife and a friend and proceeded to run it into the ground in just the same way, only losing more money this go-round for that same reason, because I had become unaware of what my block actually was. And most of us have convinced ourselves that we have really good reasons for not doing the thing that we dream about doing. Reasons completely different than the real reasons. So it's very important that you start moving towards doing the thing that you want to do, even if you're sure that you'll fail. Because you need to access the specific blocks in order to override them. If you've changed your life, as I did, to avoid encountering your blocks, if, for example, you're not trying to write because you have a problem with writer's block or procrastination about, finishing your projects, for example, then you're never going to encounter the actual block. You've just shrunk your life to fit inside your blocks. But you need to encounter your blocks in order to remove them. So do the thing first, even if you're sure you'll fail. Once again, pay the price up front. Be willing to say to yourself, yes, I'm going to encounter my block, and it's going to be painful, and it's going to be hurt, and it's going to hurt, and I'm going to be afraid, and I'm going to, and I may be unsure of myself, and I don't know what to do, and all the other 10,000 things that may stop you. But be willing to experience that block, because that is the first step to removing it. And the second step to removing it is number 2. Separate your feelings from your thoughts. Locate feelings in your body, not your beliefs. Yesterday I was working with one of my students here one of the members of the owner's circle in his Ambition Ignition session, and we were talking about the feeling of overwhelmedness that he has when thinking about trying to accomplish his goals. And one of the things that I asked him was, well, where is that feeling located in your body? And he was saying that he had trouble locating where it was in his body, and that it felt to him just like, you know, just something that was in his mind. And the funny thing about that is that what that usually means is that the feeling, I asked him, and after more discussion, it turned out that the feelings were actually in his brow, his forehead, around his eyes, his jaw, you know, his teeth being clenched, and so forth. All of the things that we might call feelings are located in our bodies. If it is a learned safety signal that's keeping you from doing something, I guarantee you there are some muscles in your body that are engaging in response to that signal. It doesn't matter whether they're causing you to grit your teeth or squint your eyes or bury your, you know, your jaw or clench your neck or hunch in on yourself or swing your arms. There are dozens of different physical responses that people have to something that they're not able to do, but they are all physical responses, and they can be resolved by taking conscious control of the muscle tension. This is a technique I teach in the Procrastination Cure workshop that I do. It's also been something that I discussed on my blog in a few articles last August, and in the months since then, I've learned quite a lot of additional things that I'll be sharing with Owner Circle members in this month's Life-Changing Secrets CD. But the basics of the technique simply require that you know where physically these feelings are located in your body, because that's the first step to being able to actually eliminate them. And as you do that repeatedly with different feelings that come up, and sometimes there may be literally dozens of different variations in how your body responds to a particular circumstance, but other times you can have one body response or two body responses. I found last year that 80% of my chronic procrastination in working on my goals and trying to do these writing projects and everything else that I was trying to do in my life at the time, 80% came from two feelings that were in my body. One feeling was a feeling of despair, that I wasn't any good, that I couldn't accomplish anything, and what was the use anyway? That was all wrapped up in one body feeling. And the second body feeling was a feeling of, you know, why do I have to do all this? Although as I traced it back and used the feeling elimination technique, what happened as I traced the feeling backwards, I discovered it was actually a feeling of, you know, I don't want to do this. You know, it was some pre-kindergarten emotional imprint of not wanting to do something and presumably being told that I had to. And eliminating those two things eliminated like 80% of my chronic procrastination regarding the things that I do. And I have, there are some articles about that on my blog, and there's some more information in the Procrastination Cure course about how to actually do that. And as well in this month's CD for the Owner Circle. So actually that's number three, use the feeling removal technique. Use the feeling removal technique to actually remove the feelings from your body and remove the response. And I don't know, there are a few of you on this call who've known me either just from in the last year, and a couple of people who've known me for a much longer time than that, and I'm sure you can notice the difference in how I'm speaking tonight and how I spoke 6 months ago, or how I, you know, acted when you met me 10 years ago, or a lot of things like that. You can probably tell that there's a significant difference in how I behave and respond now to how I did then, and that is solely because for the last 6 months, I have been systematically eradicating every flinch response that I have to any interaction that I have with people, or to working on my goals or achieving things. So you need to, I'm going to skip ahead to number five here, ruthlessly eliminate all negative emotions and their sources from your life permanently. If you want to make this kind of change in your life, this is what you need to do. Whenever you flinch, however lightly, at a thought, whenever you think, you know, or like I was thinking a month or two ago about Putting on all these the workshops that I have planned for 2007 and doing all of the things that I wanted to accomplish this year, when I would think, oh gosh, that's a lot of work, and flinch a little bit, I systematically removed every single one of those. If I hadn't, I'd still be worrying about how big it was going to be and wouldn't have started working on any of it yet. So systematically eliminate every negative emotion, every negative response that you have to the things that you are trying to do. And finally, number four, remember that deserving is for animals. Okay, you do not have to deserve something in order to get it. This is just another learned safety response, learned safety signal. You need to unlearn it. Okay, so this is the basis of what you need to do. The details of the technique are not something I'm going to cover on the details of the technique are not something that I'm going to cover on this call, because that was a 2-hour call by itself last September. And there are articles linked from my blog about this. You know, I've talked about it since then in some of the emails that I've sent out, and it will also be available in the Procrastination Cure workshop recordings. So, but for right now, just being even aware of this will actually give you a significant leg up in being able to make progress, because when you know the feeling is there and you know where it is in your body and the muscles that you're tensing, you can untense them. It just won't necessarily be permanent unless you use the full technique that I'm talking about here. So let's move to page 7, which is how to stay focused and accomplish any goal in far less time with far less stress than you ever imagined possible. Now, I've already talked a little bit about some of the principles on this page, so some of this is going to be a review, but let's just go ahead and go through these here real quick. Okay, number one, use the ratchet principle. Use the ratchet principle. A ratchet is a device that allows a wheel to turn or a gear to move in only one direction. If you turn it one way, it goes. If you turn it the other way, it'll stick like a pair of handcuffs. Handcuffs have a ratchet in them that when you close them, they stay closed unless you unlock it with the key. You can always keep making them tighter, but you can't make them looser without the key. That's a ratchet. A few weeks ago, I sent out an email to everybody who was in the group at that time called How Ratchets Control Your Life. And I explained how every little thing that you have a habit of in your life is going to keep driving your life in a particular direction. So you need to utilize the ratchet principle to make your life better by small incremental improvements as long as they keep going in the same direction. And at this point, we've talked about this endlessly, but I'm going to give you one more example of a ratchet principle to show you how it can apply to things besides the sort of general habit type examples that I've given you so far. One of the things that my wife started doing in the last year in her business, she runs a lingerie and adult toy store in West Palm Beach, and what she started doing was that she developed a discount program for exotic dancers where she gets their information in exchange for giving them a regular discount card, and then calls them to let them know when merchandise in their size and their, you know, of their color preferences or whatever else is available. And this is an example of a ratchet in the sense that what is going to happen is that with respect at least to that particular segment of her business, she's not dependent on ups and downs of when people decide to come into the store. Instead, because she's capturing that information, she and building up a set of steady customers, as long as she is gaining more people into that program than are falling out because of moving away or whatever else, she's going to be continually ratcheting up her income from that segment of her customers. And those of you on this call who are entrepreneurs or business people should be thinking about this right now, how you can use that same principle in whatever your business is. If you're not, you're not paying attention. Okay? So, let's say that you have a goal to clean up your house, let's say. And right now, because right now it's very messy and you don't have a whole lot of time to work on it, and you've been making a practice in the past of attempting to do a big cleanup project and get the whole place cleaned up all at once, and it hasn't really been working for you. So what you could do is establish a ratchet by ensuring that the house is always cleaner tomorrow than it is today, by however small an amount, or even just making sure that you never make it any messier than it is, but ideally make it a little more clean. What's going to happen is that over time, it can't help but getting cleaner, just like handcuffs will get tighter and tighter over time unless you have the key and you turn it back the other way. So create ratchets in your life. See how you can apply this principle. This principle can also be applied to getting out of debt, by the way, and that's something I'll probably be talking about with Owner Circle members tomorrow in their personal impact coaching session, which is all about setting up ratchets in your life. So the second thing that you need to do, again, we're still on page 7 here, is obey the willpower law. Only the first one's free. Only the first one's free. We talked about this before. Only the first decision that you make every day is one that you're going to have lots of willpower points to use. Okay, you only get so many willpower points a day, so make sure that you use them wisely. If you're going to spend some time focusing on something, figure out how you can apply that focus to more than one day by making a decision to do something the same way, same place, same time every day. This is another thing that's, again, remember that the Six Mass document is your blueprint to for how to put all of this into your life. Number three, have a success environment. We're talking about more about that in a minute. I've said some things about having people in your life that support you, that tell you the right things, you know, to have the same beliefs that you do, who believe that things are possible for you. Four, a verbal agreement isn't worth the paper it's printed on. Write your goals down. Your brain cares more about that stupid piece of paper than it cares what you think in your mind is an idle thought. It just does. Finally, nothing happens without a deadline. Nothing happens without a deadline. People who are going to die if they don't take their medicine generally don't take it unless they're going to die today. Okay? If you know you're going to die in a particular period of time, it makes a big difference to whether you'll actually take your medicine compared to you'll die sometime in the indefinite future because you're smoking, let's say. So set deadlines, write them down, write your goals down, make a decision. And finally, on page 8, I want to tell you a little bit about the things that you have to have in order to create a success environment. Now, this is the most important thing in terms of principles. The most important thing is what I've been telling you over and over and over through this call. Pay the price first for what you want. If you pay the price, you can get almost anything. But part of the price, if you are going to do something that is a lifestyle change for you, if you are making a change in how you live your life, your career, whether you're an employee versus a business person, whether you're, an employee versus an independent, contractor in the truly independent sense of a writer or artist or other, truly freelance professional. Anything that involves a major lifestyle change, and that can include, by the way, fitness changes that you're making or just about any other type of change that we've talked about today, you need a support environment, okay? Whether that's a fitness something like weight whether it's something like Weight Watchers for a fitness program or Alcoholics Anonymous, or whether it's a mastermind or success group for business people, or a networking group for salespeople, or whatever it is, you need to hang out with people who have the beliefs, who are doing the things that you want to do and have the belief that they can do it and that will inspire you to believe that you can do it. This is the most important piece of paying the price for success if what you're doing is something that requires that. Likewise, if something that you're doing involves the development of skill, if you want to be really good at a skill, you need to be able to hang out with people who have the right beliefs about that skill, because if you're the wrong beliefs, you're going to do things badly. For example, in business, it is deadly to focus overmuch on what your product is and not enough on what your marketing is. Yes, you have to have a good product, but as I said earlier, what's inside is often not as much the determining factor as what's outside you. What's outside you is customers, and they need to know what it is that you have. If they don't, it doesn't matter how good your product is. Excuse me. Sorry, coughing fit there. Went too long without drinking anything. So it is fatal to your business in that case if you hang out with other people who focus on product and don't think enough about marketing. It's fatal to your fitness efforts if you are fixated on a particular form of exercise or particular form of eating and don't expose yourself to the opinions of people who started from somewhere like where you are and got to where you want to be, because frankly, if you knew what you were doing, you'd already be successful. So having a good success environment is critical. I would not have made the leap that I have made in the last year to actually doing something, to actually publishing a book, something I've thought about many times in the last 20 plus years. You know, I would not be there if I had not gotten involved in such a group and such a program last year. It's as simple as that. Knowing is not enough. If you're trying to change your lifestyle in a significant way, like a lot of the people who were in my 7 days to live your dreams workshop two weeks on a regular basis, you know, it wasn't being told an idea in one workshop that made the difference most of the time. What made the difference most of the time is when somebody heard the idea in one workshop and then realized that what the idea meant in another workshop because of how I was applying it in helping somebody through a specific problem that they were having, or hearing the idea another way in a different context of how it applied to, say, personal organization and balance versus how it applies to creativity or decision making. Just knowing the things is not enough. You have to actually bring them into your life in a way that's going to change who you are, that it becomes a skill that you have, that you have literally regrown those brain pathways to become a different person, just like I have. And I did that not by, you know, oh, I learned a bunch of stuff in the first workshop I took, and now I know how to do all this. I knew how, but I still had to get past all of my two, three dozen emotional blocks about asking for people to pay me money. You may have no idea how hard it was for me to write the first article on my blog where I actually said, "Buy my book." That was an incredible leap for me. Me, who almost, you know, ended up homeless because I couldn't ask anybody to buy something. But I would not have gotten as far as even figuring out what that block was or how to fix it if I hadn't had the supporting environment of people who had done what I wanted to do. And who told me, yes, you can do it too. So you need these five things. Number one, you need examples to emulate and aspire to. Examples to emulate and aspire to. Number two, you need to be challenged and encouraged. You need to be challenged by someone who's going to say, you can do more than that. You can be more than you've been. I believe in you. Because if you don't have that, it's going to be a lot harder than it needs to be. You're doing things the hard way. And that way, really sucks. Number three, the fellowship of your peers. I can't tell you what it's meant to me in the past several months when I go to my group and other people who are, you know, struggling with their writing projects or their workshops or whatever, or whatever it is that they do, and they say, you know, so how's that coaching thing going? How's that working out for you? Or the people who, you know, who look up to me and are excited because of the progress that I've made and, you know, where I'm now in a place where they want to be. Number four, a clear code of conduct. A clear code of conduct. You need to know with absolute clarity what your values are, what you will and won't. If you don't, this is just more choices where you're going to be burning willpower points in a situation trying to figure out what it is that you should or shouldn't do. So establish your personal standards, have a code of conduct. Best of all, a shared code of conduct with the people that you interact with that is common and understood amongst all of you, so that you do not have to, you know, communicate yourself or have misunderstandings about how it is that you're going to be working with these people. And finally, number five, you need rituals and systems for success. This is the ratchet principle again. This is the willpower principle again. This is the same principles that I've been drumming over and over and over again in the last 2 hours and 15 minutes. So, everything comes down to this, okay? Are you going to create an environment which is going to make it easy for you to succeed, or are you going to make things unnecessarily hard for yourself and drift off into nothingness and doing the same old, as you've always been doing? Okay? That's not a decision that I can make for you. But I can tell you about your options as far as what you can do about it or not do about it. And what I have done is, in order to help you make a decision about that, I've put together a special package for the people on this call and the people on this call only who have taken the time to listen to my story and Josh's story and all of the things that I've been telling you. And if you've, you know, and if you're still here on the line, it means that you are very interested in making a big difference in your life and how you can best do that. So this is not, but this is still not for everyone. I understand that there are many people who, for whatever reason, are not in a place where they're able to make a commitment. But just as there were consequences for me in my life of not being able to make a commitment, of not being able to pay the price up front for what I wanted, so too there are consequences here. So what I want to tell you about, I call it, you know how in the old days they always used to advertise toys on TV saying that the batteries were not included. And with most workshops like this, you know, it's very much a batteries not included kind of a situation. You get the toy, you find out what it is that, you know, you need to do in your life, as I've just given you all of this information about what to do in your life. And then you go home, and it's not only batteries not included, it's some assemblies required. Okay, so the toy sits on the shelf because it has no batteries. So what I'm going to do for you is that I've put together a program that will allow you to get the batteries as well as the toy. Okay? So I call it the Batteries Included package. And what it includes, first of all, is the Procrastination Cure Workshop. Okay? This is a critical piece if you really want to get past all of the shared, the learned safety signals the feelings and blocks that keep you from taking action on anything from talking to strangers to going after your goals or being successful, you know, or even just getting past your disinclination to mow the lawn. Okay, if you want to get past those feelings and move forward, get the rocks out of the back of your truck. The Procrastination Cure is a 6-CD workshop. Okay, it's all material that I did with the 7 Days to Live Your Dreams group last year. And it includes one of those CDs, one of those entire CDs is nothing but me going through with individual people one by one and asking them what was stopping them and working with them right there and then to eliminate those blocks. So one of those whole CDs is devoted just to that. But the other CDs will explain in much more detail about how these safety signals come into existence and how they get installed and how to remove them. Okay, I mean, there's basically an entire 2+ hour workshop in there just on doing the feeling removals. So this package includes that entire workshop and all the workbooks that you would go through and fill in as you go through the process of doing that. The second thing that includes, because, you know, at that point you now know how to get the rocks out of the back of the truck. So the next step is to increase the size of your engine, develop the skills that you need in the areas of self-acceptance, creativity, decision-making, motivation, taking effective action, being personally organized, and having your whole life balance. Okay, 7 skills. I could have called the workshop 7 skills for living your dreams, I suppose. So those workshops, that's about 16 CDs. I don't actually know the final number yet because I haven't finished editing all of it onto CD yet, but it's going to be about 16, 18 CDs. The entire 7 Days to Live Your Dreams workshop series with all the workbooks, all the information that you need to acquire the same skills that Josh used to make his change, that other people in the group have used to start businesses, to move to the number of life changes of major life changes undertaken by people in the group that you know that I've received emails from has just been astounding. But that entire workshop series is included as well. And at this point now, we've talked about getting the rocks out of the truck, making the engine bigger. So those are the essential skills that could be looked at as being the toy. So now let's talk about the batteries, okay? Because all of that is all wonderful and everything, but as one of the workshop attendees actually told me that he has been really missing the series since it ended because, you know, it's not as easy to keep that high level of motivation and belief and application of the techniques when you do not have regular contact with other people living the dream. So to get the batteries, I'm also including a full membership in the Owner Circle. And what this includes is a monthly newsletter called Change Without Pain, Life Without Struggle. And this is going to be your monthly guide to increasing the serenity and confidence that comes from owning your life. Okay, this is about the difference, we talked about this earlier, between achieving your goals and living a fulfilling life. There's a significance between the two. Significant difference between those two things. It's one thing to achieve your goals, and it's an entirely different thing to live a fulfilling life, and that's what that's going to help you do. The second thing that's part of that membership, that monthly membership, is that you get the Life-Changing Secrets CD, which is going to continually be new developments in the techniques, because I'm continually improving these things. In the last 6 months, I've learned probably more now than most anybody about applying this feeling removal technique of all the variations. I've been, you know, doing this technique with friends and relatives, on my students, on myself. I have a whole host of enhancements and additional updates to the material that I taught in the Procrastination Cure that's going only to Owner Circle members this month on their Life-Changing Secrets CD. Next is the monthly Mindshift training and personal impact coaching. This is a slight variation from what I did in 7 Days to Live Your Dreams, where every session was effectively a skills workshop, kind of like this one that you've been through right now. For this year in the Owner Circle program, I'm splitting out the training and the coaching into two different things and doing less intensive more intensive training on fewer things. So while tonight we've talked about literally dozens of things, in an actual mind shift training in future, there would be a fraction as much ground being covered, but in a lot more detail. Okay, we would be dealing with things specifically how to do them, and actually practicing with each other the necessary skills, beliefs, mindsets, etc. The other monthly session is a personal impact coaching, which is a group coaching that will focus on finding out where everyone is at, you know, asking, as I said earlier, how is it going with you? And as I said, you would not believe the impact that it makes to have somebody asking you that and sharing that information with each other about where you are in your lives, from a standpoint of encouraging you to make progress on what you're trying to achieve. So, finally, the last thing in all of this will also be one one-on-one session with me, because basically, if after all of this, you still don't know, or you can't decide, or you are stuck and you don't really know where to proceed, I have what's called the Ambition Ignition personal coaching session, and that uses the 6 master keys, the other workbook that I've told you about, given you links to. And what happens with that is that you fill out the information about where you're at, and I use that to work with you one-on-one to figure out exactly where you need to go from where you are right now, like the first session that I had with someone for one of those last night, and gave them 3 specific things just for them to move forward with the specific problems that they were having that they described on those worksheets. So that is also included in this total batteries included package. And now the value of all of these things, I mean, between the 6 CD procrastination cure set that's worth over $300, the 7 Days to Live Your Dreams series that's worth well over $2,000, the, you know, the CDs and the newsletters, you know, and the Ambition Ignition, we're talking about another $1,000 worth of stuff there, and all of these monthly coaching and training sessions, and the Pathfinders Forum, where you'll be able to exchange, you know, is basically a bulletin board for ongoing discussion, so it's not just once a month, but all the time online, ability to exchange information with other members of the group and with me. All of this, when you add all of this stuff up, it comes to over $11,300 worth of stuff. But obviously, I'm not going to be charging you that. And the reason, one of the reasons, is that I made a goal last year when I turned 38, when I made the decision to actually take the coaching that I was telling you about earlier. And one of those goals effectively translates on a practical level that I want to have 39 people in this Owner Circle program by the time I turn 39 next month. So in order to achieve that goal, I am slashing the price of all of this down to $2,497, which comes out to, over the period of 1 year, which this is for, $6.84 a day. Okay, so while, you know, $6.84 a day, you could spend that by accident. Okay, but having the life that you want is not an accident. So what I want for you to do right now is, you know, write down this URL or type it into your web browser, theownerscircle.com, theownerscircle.com / batteries, batteries. And when you go there, you'll have a page that will summarize everything that I just told you about what's in the package. And if you're going to do this and you want to get into tomorrow night's personal impact coaching, obviously you need to sign up in less than 24 hours because 24 hours from now we'll be wrapping that session up. But if you want to get into that session and into the coming sessions like Willpower Free Fitness and get all of the newsletters and workshops with and CDs with the updates to the Procrastination Cure, all of the material that you need in order to rip out every feeling that has ever stopped you from doing something in your life, you need to do this right away. Okay, because what's going to happen is that if you don't, this is just going to become another workshop experience that you had and faded away. It's just going to be something that you heard that was kind of interesting and you thought it sounded like a good idea and maybe you should do that someday. And that's all. And it's just going to go away. And your life is going to be the same. You're not going to be any closer to getting rid of the feelings that are stopping you from moving forward. You're not going to be any closer to achieving the goals that you're thinking about and that you've been thinking about for how many ever years and not doing anything about. I went from not doing anything about my goals to achieving them, and you can do the same thing, but you have to actually do something. Some of you may be concerned about the amount of money. You may be thinking, well, I'm already in debt. What you need to understand is that this is one of those situations where after you make a commitment, you will know how. You'll be able to discover how you can make another $6.84 a day. Also, in my workshop tomorrow, I'll be talking about how to ratchet down your debt. It's an incredibly simple method that I used to get out of debt myself about 9 and 11 years ago that I used to get out of debt myself when I had a great deal of debt. It doesn't involve needing to make any more money. It doesn't involve spending less money, but it involves a difference in perspective on how you work with your finances. That's part of tomorrow night's workshop that I hope you'll attend, especially if that's something that you're concerned about, you know, how you're going to pay, you know, for the $6.84 a day. So that's what I wanted to bring to you, and I also wanted to, you know, at this point, give myself a little pat on the back for doing something once again that used to be something that I would almost die rather than do, and that's ask somebody to buy something from me, no matter how good of a thing it was, no matter how important a thing it was to that person and what a difference it would make in their life. I could not, in the past, ask anybody to do what I'm asking you to do now, which is go to that website and purchase this because it's going to make a difference in your life. You're going to spend that $6.84 a day anyway. You're going to spend it on something. You'd better spend it on this. So I think that's about it for what I have to say on this call. There is a ton of information. You know, if you decide not to do this, there's still a ton of information here that you can use, but again, I suggest that you be realistic about considering whether you will in fact do anything without some assistance. Many hands do in fact make light work. Having an environment of other people who are trying to achieve the same things as you will make a difference in your life. I can absolutely guarantee you that. Thank you for listening. I hope that that all of you can reach at least as much success in your lives as I have in mine. And good night.